So the distortion of mind that I wanted to talk about tonight was the angry mind. And I started thinking, okay, now what is an emotion? What is an emotion? Does it have any reality? I mean, I enter a situation and have a particular feeling, and in Buddhism, feeling means pleasant or unpleasant. And as that feeling begins to manifest in me, and I begin to perceive the situation in a certain way through that feeling, the feeling gets embodied in a certain way through kind of a posture or an attitude or a presentation that I call an emotion. It's really a surge of energy that comes up around a particular feeling tone. And a particular historical reference to that situation allows a particular energy to arise. And depending upon how I interpret that situation, I then interpret the feeling to be a certain thing, the emotion to be a certain thing, I mean. It's not as if there is a certain thing called anger, fear. Oh, wait a second here. I've got this list that I got this weekend. And I'll tell you what. If you want to ask me any emotion, I've got it here. From pining and wistful and yearning to petrified and horror and dread, upset and unsettled, remorseful and sorry, removed and remote, forlorn and mopey. You see where we could have these distortions of mind? We could just go forever in this stuff. But the point is that the energy gets interpreted in a certain way. And it's important to understand that there isn't something called a certain emotion. It's interpreted through perception, through past experience, and how I have interpreted this situation, and whether that energy happens to be dull or heavy, then I pick one of the feelings which accompany or associate it with dullness, like depression, sadness, grief. Or if it happens to be light in tone, if the energy happens to be wistful, or, wait a minute, I have another whole section of those. I can be delighted or amused or pleasant or tranquil or relevant or reverent, attuned or thrilled or rapturous or astonished or happy or easy or glad. You see, we had a workshop in Wise Speech, and I just want to... There's a difference between personality application, personality improvement, and Dharma. And I thought I was just... In Dharma, there's essentially nothing. And then we see how the personality all fits back in. And we can go endlessly in this course of action against or for each emotions and how to say things, and find ourselves feeling very ennobled by our particular right pattern and presentation of speech, and finding the right details and the flow line, the flow chart of how to, or we can just let it be and bring it back to zero. So let us understand that from the start. We're really not talking about much here. And yet we are so set to be so worried about ourselves in response to these emotions that arise. We have such a history of emotional tension within ourselves. And if, when we find ourselves caught like that, sometimes it's just worth asking, where is the emptiness in this? Where is there lightness in this? Those are Dharma questions. not personality improvement questions. So emotions are really from the head, not the heart. Do we understand that? We like to think of emotions as being somehow truer than thought, but they're really an embellishment of thought, because the emotion is identified through thought and the embellishment of the content that we give that feeling. And somehow we think, well, intuitively I know. And what we really mean is that I'm feeling a certain thing. And somehow we trust that more than we trust our thinking. I was looking for a house at one point to rent, my wife and I. And so we were in line with this very nice house, and there were a whole bunch of people there. And the person who was the owner, the renter, had us all lined up. And said, you know, I pride myself on intuitively getting a feel for people. And so I've sized you up already. And you don't get the house. That's what he said to me. And I thought, a lot of things. But I was thinking, you know, we would have taken extraordinary care of that house. I mean, if there are good tenants, my wife and I are good tenants. And I was just thinking, now how accurate was that person's assessment of me? I don't know what he saw or and that's fine, but the fact was that I would have been a good tenant. I know I would have. We would have really taken care of that. And yet he trusted so assuredly his perspective of me. And I'm just wondering how often we make that mistake. Do we? When people would come into the hospice program, and I felt like, having done a lot of meditation, I could assess people as well as anyone. So I always found myself in the middle of interviews. And after 15 years of doing that, it was a dart game. I was off as many times as I was on. It's not that easy just to know a person intuitively, because it's an emotional feel of what? Hair color, size, how they hold themselves, lots of different things. And it's worth questioning that a little bit. And that's not really what intuition is, in its deeper and more profound level of meaning. It really means from silence, from stillness, beyond thought, beyond emotion, beyond the interpretations of the mind, acting in accordance or alignment with the stillness. In any case, we're going to move into the world of anger tonight. It's really a fascinating world. It's only a fascinating world if you leave your history of anger behind. Because what will accompany us on this journey into this emotion, this very complex emotion, it's even difficult to call it an emotion, because it's more of a strategy of avoidance in feeling. But we each have an emotional reaction to the emotion of anger based upon the history that we've had with anger. And for many of us, it's been a torturous history, one in which I have been either punished or hurt for expressing anger, go to your room, or slapped, or seeing anger in another, having been hurt through that. And so we're very wary of anger itself because of our historical relationship to it. So what is it that we coat anger with but fear? We have a trepidation, a reserve, a reservation when we see someone else being angry or when we feel ourselves angry. So already, even in this very complex, layered emotion of anger, we add another layer, which is our charge in relationship to it. And it just keeps going like that. Because we'll have a feeling, pleasant or unpleasant, then we'll have a sense of what emotion is pertinent to this situation. And then, because that might be an unpleasant one, we'll defend ourselves to that. We'll look, which is what? Defending ourselves is fear or obstruction of some kind, aversion of some kind. So there's that layer. And then we have a whole set of strategies in which we project out whatever we're feeling. And so we're either warding off aversively or projecting out. And so the whole thing is extraordinarily complex. Is it any wonder that when we're in the thick of an argument, we can't figure out what... It just feels like we're enmeshed in something, like a cobweb. It's difficult to even get a feeling for where this all leads and how to depict any clarity in this whatsoever. So what is anger? We have a certain expectation in life or something of myself or of an event or a person, an expectation. And that expectation isn't met, which most expectations aren't. So there is then the reaction, since the expectation isn't met, depending upon how much value I have given and worth I have given that expectation, how much intensity of energy I feel in relationship to that expectation, when it's not met, I'm thrown into confusion or fear. Okay, so now something's not met. There's also the moment when the expectation isn't met that there's a grief. Now, I tell you this because for those of you who know the cycle of grief, anger is one of the attributes of grief. And when we are angry, we are in a phase of grief. To understand that. Because it's a lost opportunity. It's a missed expectation. So we have this feeling of grief along with a sense of fear because grief is confusing. It's frightening. Things are out of control. Things are chaotic and confusion. And because I feel disempowered within that confusion, my world isn't coming together the way I want it to come together, what arises from that sense of disempowerment is an emotion in which the focus and energy is towards empowerment, towards taking the situation in hand and being aggressive. If you think, and the righteousness, the directed righteousness that would allow. And it can be at anything. Anger can be at anything. It can be at internally, because I didn't hold myself to the expectations that I wanted as a child or as whatever, or towards you because you were late, or towards an event because it rained, or towards anything. And because I've lost that empowerment, the self tries to gain its empowerment through anger, through righteousness, through a point of view in which the perspective then becomes right, and the event is then secondary. No longer do I care really about you as a person. I care about my righteousness. My righteousness then becomes the very sense of self, the prop that allows me to stand up steady. and I milk it. And I am very reluctant to let go of the stance of self-righteousness, of that prop of self-security, because under that I am being driven by confusion and disorientation because the event didn't happen the way I wanted it to. And to keep that confusion at bay as a defense, I maintain the anger. Another word for that is insanity. And then on top of all that, remember, we have this other coding of our history with anger when it arises. And that there is so much confusion with the fact that we are angry, and I wasn't taught to be angry, I was taught to be nice, and the fact that I've lost contact with the event or the person entirely. They're no longer even in the scope, on the radar screen. It's no longer whether the weather is rainy or sunny, or whether you did what you were supposed to do. It becomes this empowered righteousness that the whole thing stands upon. Now, some of us who have been Buddhists for a while feel like we should be Buddhist diplomats, always acting gently, not getting upset, not letting things perturb us. We've heard the words equanimity and balance. This is a young Buddhist. Hopefully not one who's been coming to the Monday nights very long. And we think we're working towards something of a higher order, something that has more meaningfulness than anger. And of course there's suppression when we do feel anger, because it doesn't fit our Buddhist persona. And of course that leads to all kinds of self-anger, because you can't deny the fact, a good person of awareness can't deny the fact that that's what they're feeling. They just can deny the fact that that's what they're going to show. And then there comes all sorts of self-blame and all of that sort of stuff. So that's a strategy that a Buddhist might misunderstandedly present. It's also a strategy, I find, when people die spiritually, that those who call themselves spiritual often have the most difficult deaths, for exactly the same reason that they think that they should be welcoming death or some other orientation to death other than the one they have, which quite likely is quite fearful and upsetting. So they deny the feelings of what is actually arising and place what they think a good Buddhist would do when they are dying, and struggle enormously in that confrontation of the real and the expected. You see how important it is just to drop down to what you're feeling, to just own it, and that this dropping down, just letting yourself feel it. Okay, this is it, right here. No pretension, no camouflaging. Just let me hold this. For how can the, knowing that anger is a layered cake built on confusion and disappointment and grief, how are we ever supposed to allow ourselves to come to these more primal emotions that are driving the situation if we keep being pretentious, or if we keep battling the fact that we're angry? We have to go through the anger and drop to the center. We can't, battling the anger keeps us on the periphery of the anger, being upset with being upset with being upset, adding layer upon layer. And at some point, okay, this is what I'm feeling. just lining ourselves up. So the first movement, the first spiritual step, the first step is the last step. Stopping. Stopping. And when we stop, we're willing to stop our pretension. We're willing to stop our avoidance. We're willing to stop our defensiveness. We're willing to stop the blame of why I am angry on the situation, on you. And we're willing to stop the self-blame of how bad I am for being angry. All of that is just layers of pretension. We're stopping now. It's like driving a stake in the ground. This is it. I stand in here. This is it. This is it. I fall or thrive in this spot. Then immediately the layers of confusion start melting because the acuity of the awareness begins to touch what the real driving energy is behind this energy of anger. Often it's sadness. Often something that has been very precious, that has meant something, an expectation unfulfilled, something that you counted on, something that you believed in, something that you wanted, something that you cherished, we drop to that sadness. Oh. I'm not going to get this. I'm not going to have this. She doesn't like me. Whatever the reason or perceived reason for the sadness. Oh, okay. But I'm still not moving. I still can't move. That's not good enough. That's not genuine. This is just another layer of self-protection here. So let us not say, well, grief is really it. We're going further and deeper in this thing. We're going to take the human being and transcend the human being. Now, when you come here, I will not stop you at the level of personality. You can stop there, but my job is to keep us going, keep us plummeting to the depths of what this thing is about, to keep sinking to the heart of this thing. Wise speech, tactically, is not good enough. Yes, it's helpful. Yes, it allows us to own and take responsibility for the pain, to put ourselves on a course so that I can correct and say the things that I want to say more accurately and more truthfully and more alignment with what the situation calls for, but there's still someone doing the whole thing. We have to go deeper than that. That's an important first step. Important first step is owning all of that. That is the basis on which the meditation begins, on which the Dharma begins. Dharma does not begin in self-improvement. It begins after we have stopped. Okay, so now we're in a different dimension here. Now we see that what we have really been fighting through all this strategizing, through all this avoidance, through all this defensiveness, is the touch of stillness. That's what we have been really afraid of. So the base level on which the person is built is fear. And from that sense of fear of stillness, we extrapolate out in countless pathways, filling sheets of emotions that are all empty. Every single one of them have no bearing, point to no one, point to no state that's true. Say nothing, nothing about who you are. And you can see, this is the world. Thousands and thousands of words that describe, like Eskimos describing snowstorms in 25 different... We have... I'm moved, I'm touched, I'm grateful, I'm gratified, I'm appreciative, I'm expansive, I'm arduous, I'm passionate, I'm fervent, I'm enthusiastic, I'm fresh, I'm healthy. That's the that's what we see. That's the complexity of life that we see. That's why we see all of this. This is what we do. And what the Dharma is, is synthesizing all these things down to a blank page. Now, we've all gone through countless psychological theories on how to work with these things. I remember one retreat I was teaching in which many years ago, they had this thing called, what was it called? Primal Scream. So this group of people came who were primal screamists. And they came up and they said, would it be okay if we went out and screamed instead of did our walking meditation? Well, you can do what you want. But the point is not that you have to expel these feelings in some kind of cathartic way, that it's that somehow that's not going to be a richer, make you more meaningful somehow. So why don't you just try to walk with them, or sit with them, or hold them in stillness? Okay, they said, we'll try that. And then after the retreat, they said, wow, that was amazing. I found I actually could hold these things and not have to scream them out. And then there's a group, a strategy, the current philosophy of being angry and being genuine in your anger. So I was at this mental health clinic when I was a graduate student, and the wife of the director of the clinic came in one day and just threw a tantrum. And then she left, and everybody said, boy, she was really in touch with herself. And because I was young, I was going, yeah. You just kind of buy these theories that, you know. As if anger was this thing of genuineness. It's like if you saw somebody hurting someone, you'd say, well, he's really in touch with his feelings. It's insane. Or guilt, which is self-anger. The infliction of that. Anger is a disconnectedness. It begins in confusion and ignorance. We're no longer connected to the event. Something has been severed. We are no longer in touch. We are in our heads operating from the theory of our righteous view. No longer. How do you think the terrorists did what they did. They did what they did through the view of being disconnected, no longer in touch with. They could care less about the humanity they were hurting. They cared about their righteous view of what they were doing and why it was necessary to do what they were doing. Who they were doing it to didn't matter a flick. That's how thick, that's how ennobling anger feels. You're on top of the world. But you are in touch with a thing, not even your own emotion. Nothing. There's no connection. So the first thing we have to do in order to get some sanity back into this disconnect is to connect. Just to connect. Just to say, okay, what's going on here? The question itself opens us up to the very movement. Oh, okay. Ooh, wow, I was really out there. And what really out there means in another world. I mean, we all had the experience of having lost ourselves completely in rage and waking up to that and think, whoa, where was I? You see why this practice bases itself in connection. It has to base itself in connection, because when we have a toe, even the pinky, in place, then it can drive us. We can get knocked over, but we have a tether. We have a tether of sanity that leads back in. Okay, whoa, God, wow, all right. And the more we cultivate that tether, the stronger the rope becomes. At first, it's a very fine thread. And then it becomes a rope, and then it becomes a chain. It takes a little while. And then you will never do anything unskillful in your anger, which means brutalize someone, because you are still tethered to the humanity that you are talking with. You're never so far astray that you could blow up a building. Because you have the tether. The tether is the thing. The tether is the salvation. The touch of awareness, the moment of mindfulness. Because in that moment, there's something in you that has stopped, that has resonated with the stillness, that has resonated with sanity, that has resonated with something beyond anger. So the first thing we have to do, we have to go in reverse order. This is the hard thing. You got to go back into the anger. If you don't go back into the anger keeps employing itself through confusion, substantiating the realities of confusion. So you have to go back in. You have to say, okay, let me feel the anger. Let me get in touch with what I'm feeling. Let me feel this thing. And what you begin to notice when we touch that is that anger is generated by one of two things. Either I'm hurt, which is the grief component, or I'm afraid. Now I can be afraid of being hurt. So those two can be very... Okay, so the first thing I need to do when I'm feeling angry is to walk outside and say, okay, what am I feeling here? Am I hurt or am I afraid? So now we're coming to something more true, more basic, in terms of the emotions, not in terms of emptiness, but in terms of the truer, the more substantial thing that's driving this thing. Okay, I'm hurt. I feel hurt. Let me feel that. And then we drop from that hurt, we drop even lower. The hurt we begin to see is because some expectation wasn't met. Now, Dharma is about one thing and one thing only. To rest with things as they are. The expectation wasn't met. That's the truth of the situation that was soon covered up with confusion and disempowerment anger and thrashing out, in reverse order, I have to come back to that. I have to come back to the sense through disempowerment, through confusion, through pain, through the pain. And recover and say, okay, it's raining today. All right. It's raining today. Let it be. So we come back to letting it be. I don't have to go anywhere else but that. Let me be, let it be. Just let it be. Let it be. Let it be. Let it be that I didn't live up to my expectations. Let that be. Let it be that I've been driven by my social and cultural mores and that I should be good and happy and I'm not feeling any of that and I feel resentful that I can't live up to what everyone's told me I'm supposed to be as a Dharma teacher or as a good son and daughter. Okay, let me just hold that. Now see, this is where your homework comes in. See, this is coming back down, going back down the circuit now. Okay, so what is it that, what are the inscriptions, the cultural overlays that I live with in myself where my expectations are never met? Well, there are many. You have them listed in your mind, in your cells, and I suggest you list them on paper so that you know what your cells are breathing. And then you go back to those inscriptions, and you see how they drive us into feelings of resentment, which is the first, you know, annoyance, resentment, frustration. Those are all on this sheet somewhere. Okay. Now you can hold the resentment. Now the resentment is there. Doesn't mean the resentment makes you feel good about yourself by uncovering that. So then you feel beyond the resentment, you feel kind of a sense of self-depreciation or self-inadequacy or something of wanting, a self-wanting. Okay, so that's part of it too. So now, you see, you've just plummeted. You've just gone right down. You've refused to move. You've refused to point out and depict other people as the guilty party. You've refused to take your anger and lay it upon the world or accuse anyone, including yourself. You're actually absolutely free of any finger pointing or blame. We're totally accountable now, and that's exactly what we do not want to do because we are afraid of the pain of being accountable, and yet that is where the Dharma begins. If we're going to uncover emptiness, we uncover it through our pain. And I look at anger and I see that the reasons that I usually lose my empowerment, my sense of expectation, are around fairness. These are the basic fairness issues. Loss of control. Or being negated as a person, discounted. Right? He shouldn't have pulled in front of me. That's not fair. Fairness is not a legitimate heart issue. It is a mind-driven, culturally induced issue. There is no world that's fair out there. It's constructed in the mind. So we let that go. We see how it is. People driving, pull in front of me here. Out of controlness. That's a big one. I'm going to speak about that so I'm not, in one of the upcoming series here. So we're not going to talk about that one right now. Being discounted, being negated, being dismissed, being ignored. See, where that takes you is where you actually are, which is nothing. But we can't stand being nothing. And so, again, the empowerment comes in which I can build myself up around this nothing and be something. Be a reactive nothing. At least something. And I just bring it back, you see, because anger in its essence had some caring issue. It was driven by caring. I cared about something. I was not in control of making that caring work. The expectation wasn't met. And then all the things just started happening, as we've mentioned tonight. So I go back with caring. It came from caring. I go back with caring. I'm going to care about this thing. First, I'm going to care about myself and just allow myself to feel this. And it hurts. And I'm sad. And I feel that. As a human being, I'm sad. I'm sad that life is disappointing. It's disappointing to me. Okay, I just hold that. Okay, I'm not going to wallow. No romanticism. I'm not going to go around with heavy shoulders. Yeah, I have to be strong. There's no place where I can be weaker. There's no place where I can slip and say, oh God, I am such a terrible... I can't do that. We don't have time. I'm 55. I don't know how old you are. When did your mother die? Or is she still alive? The point is, we've gone that road before. Decades now. Okay, so now it's a different road. Okay, so no romanticism. No milking it. No milking it. Don't milk it. No self-pity. None. All of that is... See, this is it. Now I'm going to hold this in front of you. I'm going to hold this in front of you until we all die together. This is it. Now. Whoa. Now there's transcendence. I so wish to be... No. But what about... No. There's no room for that now. And here is where we sit.